Session number 9360, Reel 2.
Monica Volkart's Reel 2.
About the conversion course you were doing.
Yes, that's right. I think I told you we did about a week on the groundwork, learning about theory of flight, engines. And then we started the flying after that. And we, I think I told you, it was an American aircraft we used, an American trainer, Harvard. And I also had an American instructor. And we started off doing circuits and landings. And I see in my logbook we did forced landings, stalls. And then we had a proficiency test. And then we were let loose ferrying more advanced aircraft.
Do you remember much about the test? Was it a difficult
one? It wasn't really. No, it was only 40 minutes, I see here, according to my logbook. But I was rather lucky with the Harvard because I did three good landings straight off and was sent solo. Which was rather lucky.
Were these closed cockpits?
These were closed cockpits, yes. Oh, they're much more civilised. Mm. And
how did you find them in comparison to the Tiger Moths?
Oh, they were quite different, you know. They got much more guts, and they were like a really, you know, a real aeroplane. And I do remember actually before I started flying on it, I sat in it for several hours, sort of memorising the cockpit because there were an awful lot of knobs and dials compared to the Tiger Moth, and tried to sort of memorise where they all were so I should know what I was doing when I was flying, and I think that was a help when I'd actually started the flying.
So you began flying these. Now, where were you flying?
Well, once we'd flown those, we were then able to fly the advanced aircraft like Spitfires and Hurricanes. Yes, yeah, so after we'd finished the Harvard flying, we had to do a couple of circuits and landings on an aircraft called a Battle. And also we had to fly the Hurricane. That was just an hour's flying on the Hurricane. And then we were let loose.
How did you feel about that?
Well, that was absolutely marvellous. I just felt, when I'd flown that, I felt, you know, I'd done everything, you know. That was marvellous.
No fear at all.
Oh, it was the most wonderful feeling. You know, you took off and I really can't describe it. It was absolutely fantastic.
So how long did this period of training last for?
Well, according to my logbook, I started on the 12th of October and I finished on the 21st of October. That was the day I flew the Hurricane. And that was the final day.
Where were you staying at this time?
I think I'm staying within a private house somewhere there, billeted on the private house with some people there. It was very comfortable, I do remember.
The accommodation was found for you?
Yes, by the ATA.
What sort of hours were you putting in?
Well, just normal hours. Normal hours. Got there at 9. And when you finished flying, you might finish early, because the weather's bad. You could just go off and go to the cinema.
So after you finished training at White Wharf, and you stayed there to do some ferrying, did you?
No, once we'd finished the training, I went back to Hatfield and started ferrying then.
What were you flying this time?
Yes, we were... Then I was flying Hurricanes, Spitfires and Masters.
Where were you taking these?
We were taking them all over the place to the MUs, with the maintenance units where they were. Sometimes we'd take them to the RAF airfields. We used to pick up a lot of aircraft at Cowley. And we also used to do flights up to Prestwick. Quite a lot of those flights. And where else? Yorkshire, Lorton, Little Risington, Kemble. And I see that the first Spitfire I flew was on the 15th of December, and And I took that, oh, just from Cowley to Hatfield. It was a very short flight. Just 20 minutes. It was the first Spitfire I flew.
How did you feel about that?
Well, that again was another marvellous experience. Thoroughly. Once I'd flown that, of course, I much preferred it to the Hurricane, because it was much more manoeuvrable and it was a lovely, lovely aircraft.
Did you have any choice per day?
No, you just take what you were given.
How many aircraft would you expect to move during a week?
Well, it all depended, really. You see, sometimes you had a trip up north and then you had an aircraft back again. Or if they were all local flights, you might have one or two trips locally and we'd take them back in the taxi. We had an Anson taxi aircraft that used to go around sort of picking the pilots up. So it all depends on the sort of structure of the programme, really. But there were quite a lot of the main trips would be up north, and you hoped an aircraft back, otherwise it meant back on the night train again, sitting in the corridor.
Did you have to carry any particular documentation with you?
Well, we just had a delivery chit, which we handed in, and that's all.
And the handling notes, of course.
Oh, we had the handling notes with us, yes, we had to have that, yes. But when you've flown a lot of them, of course, we didn't need them, really. After you've flown a lot of Hurricanes and Spitfires, you didn't need the notes. But of course, you always needed them for new types.
So what did you do when you weren't flying? Oh, did you do any non-flying duties?
No. Not at that stage, no.
So what were you doing? What was your social life?
Well, there wasn't really time for a lot of social life, to tell you the truth. A lot of the time, of course, you were stuck out in places, you know, staying in RAF messes. That could be quite social. Usually some parties going.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, well, we rather enjoyed ourselves. You know, they used to make quite a fuss of us.
How did the chaps react to you women?
Mixed, I think. Mixed reaction. I do remember, actually, when I went to pick up my first Spitfire, I went into this, what we call a watch office, I think it was, to hand my chit in. And there were two fighter pilots there. And they saw my delivery note, and one of them turned to the other and said, he said, "My God," he said, "women flying Spitfires, we might as well give up, old boy." I think it was just a joke.
How did you feel about that particular
thing? I thought it was rather funny.
You weren't angry?
No. Well, they got used to it in the end. Though on the whole, they were quite... they approved, I think.
And I believe you weren't allowed to wear trousers in London, is that true?
Well, we weren't really supposed to, yes. We did. I mean, we quite often did, but we weren't supposed to. Supposed to wear skirts off-duty.
What did you feel about that?
Well, I suppose it was a good idea, really. Could look a bit scruffy. But sometimes we did wear them. Otherwise, I mean, you see, if you took an aircraft up north, and sometimes you'd come back to London, you had 2 days off. So you didn't really want to drag a skirt round with you. And you only had a small overnight bag with you. So sometimes you couldn't help wearing them.
How do you think the public and other women reacted to the fact that you were doing what would have been seen as a man's job and a...
Yes, I remember one occasion when another pilot and myself, Mary Hunter, we were flying up to, taking Tiger Moths up to Scotland, and I think we'd done 4 days on the trot up to Scotland, back on the night train, four times, which was a bit exhausting. And the last occasion, we were on the station, I forget which it was, the one from Prestwick, I've forgotten the name of the station. But we, of course, were wearing our trousers and we were carrying our parachutes over our shoulder, which we had to take back. And there were two old Scotch ladies on the petrol, and one turned to the other and said, "If they knew what sights they looked, they wouldn't wear them." We thought, well, that's nice after all our hard work for a week.
So, what other duties did you have?
Well, none really. It was purely ferrying,
And how long did this go on for?
Well,
okay, yes.
Well, after 7 months ferrying on the Spitfires and Hurricanes, then I went back to White Waltham to do another course onto twin engine aircraft, and that was on an Oxford. And that course lasted till the 23rd, started on the 12th of April, finished on the 23rd.
How did this training compare with the previous time?
Well, it's just a slightly different aircraft, that's all. Just showing you how to fly a twin engine aircraft.
Did you find it relatively easy?
Yes. It was a very simple aircraft. Not rather unexciting, rather boring, slow.
So once you'd learned that, you then...
Well, then we went back to Hamble, to Hatfield, and among the other aircraft, we ferried the light twins, like Oxfords and Ansons.
Where were you taking these?
The same places. Up to Scotland, up to Yorkshire, roundabout, local.
What do you think the main hazards were, apart from weather conditions?
I think weather was the main hazard, really. Well, of course, we did have balloon barrages. They were a hazard. You had corridors through them. You had to learn the corridor to get through them. And in balloon barrages in bad weather, it was rather nasty.
Did you have lots of problems with
them? Well, there was a problem. We used to have to fly up past Liverpool, and there was a nasty, very thin corridor we had to go through there, crossing the Mersey. And if the weather was bad, because you couldn't see the balloons, and you just hoped you were right and not off course, you're going to hit one. As I should say, after weather, the balloons were the second hazard.
If you did get into any difficulties, were you ever hauled over the coals by your superiors?
Yes, oh, you would
what
be.
What would happen?
Well, it depends on the on the offence. There was one girl who went and sort of beat up her boyfriend in a Spitfire. She got the sack.
Was it quite unusual to get the sack then?
Well, I think it was for that. Yeah, well, I suppose it was, really. And she got the sack for that.
What was the normal procedure? Could you be grounded for a period of time?
Well, no, I think it all depends so much on the circumstances. I mean, people had a lot of accidents. Then they were sort of... I think you were only allowed so many, and then you were asked to go. But, I mean, discipline... I mean, it was all very friendly, really, because we all liked what we were doing, you see, and nobody really stepped out of line, because we were all so keen on the work and the job. We all took good care that we didn't do anything that would be out of place.
So how long did you continue at Hatfield?
At Hatfield.
Then went on to another course, did you?
That's right, yes. I then did a course on a Wellington, which meant that I could then fly advanced twins, more advanced twins. I say the Oxford and the Anson are very light twins. So I did a course on that, and then after that, there was another course on a Hudson, which then meant that we could fly the Mosquito.
Were they quite difficult to learn, or did you find them relatively easy?
Not really. They were reasonably easy. The Hudson was a very nice aircraft.
Why was it nice?
I think, it's difficult to describe. It's just general, the handling was nice. It was an easy aircraft to fly, provided you treated it with respect.
That was a British plane, was it?
No, it was an American plane. But then we got onto the Mosquito, which was really the best of the lot. And we had a lot of ferrying of those. We had a lot of deliveries.
How long did it take you to get accustomed to the Mosquito?
Well, not long, because that was a very lovely plane to fly. Really light and beautiful and manoeuvrable, rather like a twin engine Spitfire. It's a beautiful aircraft.
Is it basically practical work you were doing again, not theoretical?
Yes, it was all flying work. We didn't get any more theoretical theory, thank goodness. Not my strong point.
So how long did it take you to master that before you again went back to Hatfield?
Well, I think I seem to have did that Hudson course in... June 43. I do remember it was a marvellous summer, that a really hot summer. And there was a farm quite near the edge of the aerodrome, and while we were sitting around waiting for our turn to go up, we went and picked strawberries off this farm. We sat eating strawberries in the sun. I remember it's a wonderful summer, that. I always remember that.
So then you were back at Hatfield?
Then back at Hatfield again, yes.
What were you referring to?
Well, then we were flying everything, you see. Spitfires, Hurricanes. And then we got the typhoons and the tempests as well. They came under this last category of the mosquito. We had to fly the mosquito, the Hudson conversion, before we could get onto those very, really advanced singles, like the Tempest and the Typhoon.
Did you find those easy to
They were marvellous to fly, really lovely.
So how much longer were you at Hatfield?
Well, I was at Hatfield till...
I believe you transferred to Hamble in 1942.
That's right, yes.
And that was an all-women's pool?
All-women's pool.
Could you describe that as a ferry base?
Yes, well, it was a very nice little airfield, grass airfield, and we had our own mess there. Very good food, a very good catering officer, and we had our own Met office. We had a WAF officer who was transferred to us, who did the weather for us. And it was a very happy time.
Where were you billeted, in the local village?
I was billeted in Burselton with a very nice family who I still keep in touch with. We became great friends and we were very, very comfortable there. Marvellous food. They seemed to be well in with the, with the local people. So we didn't know a thing about rationing, you know. My only problems with rationing came after the war. And I enjoyed it very much.
And you weren't aware of any air raids?
No, I think there was the odd one, but we didn't really... I think the worst was over by then.
So what were your duties at Hamble?
Well, at Hamble, again, of course, we were ferrying. But I did then, after a bit, I was made a flight captain, and four of us were made flight captains, and we used to have to do the programme for the day's flying. Not always, you know, we did one day a week, I think. I organised the flights and the pilots, marry them up, you know. And also, I did also quite a bit of taxi work. We had an Anson where we had to go around collecting the pilots and dropping them. And I did quite a bit of that as well. And then we had all the ferrying. We had lots and lots of Spitfires because we got the Spitfire factories all around us. And also a lot of mosquitoes and typhoons and tempests. That was our main type of aircraft we had to ferry from there.
Where were you delivering them to?
Well, all over the place, again, up to Scotland. Some were only short flights. I remember I did have, one day I had five typhoons in a day between Eastleigh and Tangmere, backwards and forwards. Somebody picked me up and took me back and took another one over. Or it could be up to Scotland and back with another aircraft.
Did you find the work very arduous?
Well, not really, because, you see, one enjoyed it so much. Nothing's arduous, really, if you enjoy it, is it? It was such a marvellous job and such a marvellous opportunity that, you know, flying was everything. Everything else went by the board. Social life all came second.
Did you have any social life at all?
Yes, well, there were sort of trips to London, you know, and... they were very good. If we were going on leave to London, quite often they let us take an aircraft that had to be delivered to White Waltham. We fly it up there and then get a train to London. They were very helpful if it fitted in.
What did it mean to you being a flight captain?
Well, not an awful lot. You had a flight of about six that you had to sort of, you know, take under your wing, help out. If they had any problems.
What other non-flying duties did you do?
That was all, really. Just organising the programme.
So could you describe a typical day?
A typical day? Well, it all depends, of course, what you were doing. You'd arrive at the airport, arrive at the airfield, I suppose about 9, and depending on the weather, of course, if the weather was good, all your work, all the chits for the day would be laid out on the table, and you'd rush up and see where you were going, and then you'd go and check on the weather, see if the weather was okay. If it was, you might have to go off in the Anson somewhere and be dropped, you know, to pick up the pick up your aircraft and take it somewhere. And one thing I do know, it made you eat your meals very quickly, because if the weather was bad, you'd be hanging around all day, and suddenly the over the tannoy would come, the answer's off in 10 minutes. So you'd rush off to the canteen, you see, and try and gollop your meal down. It was about 12 o'clock, in about 5 minutes, and then dash off and get in the aircraft and go. So you had permanent indigestion, usually. If the weather was bad, you see, you'd hang around all day, and you might not go till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or not go at all. If the weather was really bad, then they'd scrub flying for the day, and you'd go home.
What did you do? Just sitting around? Play cards or something?
Play bridge. Or backgammon.
So how long were you actually at Hamble?
Hamble? Well, I was there till it closed in 1945. So I was there 3 years.
What happened when it closed? What options were opened here?
Well, it was a very sad day. But then all the pools were closing gradually, you see, and so we all moved on to other pools. I went on to Bristol, and I was there for a very short time. Then that closed down.
What were you doing in Bristol?
Same work. And then I finally went to Harden, near Chester, and I was there till that one closed down, and that was the end.
And you were ferrying all the time, right?
Yes.
Same sort of aircraft?
Same sort of aircraft, yes. Just from a different area. And that was the end of it all. It was very sad.
That was about 47 by then.
No, that was 45. 45, yes.
So what did you do after that?
After that, well, I was married then. Mm. So I thought perhaps I ought to sort of be a good little wife for a bit. So I didn't do any more flying then until 47, I think it was, when the RAF started a scheme whereby we could, Volunteer Reserve took women for the first time.
How did you hear about that?
Well, I saw it in the paper, I think. So I joined that. And that was quite good fun. Of course, we were only back flying light aircraft again.
Why was that? I mean,
well, that was to keep a reserve of pilots in case of another war.
Were they reluctant to take you because you were a woman?
No, they you know, decided to have women for the first time. First time women have ever flown with the RAF. And again, it was a sort of thing in a way rather like the Civil Air Guard. We got paid for it. And we had so many hours flying a year with them.
But you were only allowed to fly light aircraft?
Yes, only light. Well, they only had light aircraft. They had Chipmunk. Oh, they started off again with Tiger Moth. We were back to Tiger Moth, back to square one. And then they had Chipmunks, which were quite nice little aircraft.
Did you mind that after the advanced aircraft?
Oh, yes. Well, it was rather a letdown. But it was better than nothing, and we did get paid for it. And we could keep our hand in.
So where were you flying to this time?
Well, we were just local flying. You see, it was training all the time. We did instrument flying, which, of course, we never did with the ATA. There were new things to learn, and cross countries, and aerobatics. We never did those in the ATA, you see. And we did about 20 hours flying a year, 20 or 30 years. We had to do a fortnight course a year, summer camp, they called it.
Did you find that very difficult?
No, that was good fun. And I think, you see, we had a fortnight summer camp, and then we had so many hours flying as well over the year.
So then you stayed with the RAF for quite a while?
Well, this was only a part-time thing, you see. It was only a part-time. It wasn't full-time. I did that till they closed. But then I did get a job ferrying aircraft out to India, Pakistan.
With a private air company?
With a private air company.
What sort of aircraft were you?
Well, they were Tempests. They were taking them out to the Pakistan Air Force.
Was that quite enjoyable?
Oh, that was marvellous, yes. Yes, really marvellous.
Do you remember your reaction to the news that war had ended?
Well, of course, we were expecting it. You know, it was just a question of time. I suppose we were all very pleased. I mean, we all went and had a wild party, you know. But we did realise it was the end and it was going to be rather sad.
Yes. You're telling me about the job of the private air.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, this was delivering Tempest aircraft out to Pakistan, to the Pakistan Air Force. They were delivery flights. And five of us went out at a time. And they were very enjoyable. We landed at various places on the way, like Nice and Rome, Cyprus, and Basra in the wilds of Iran, I think it's, or Iraq, I'm not sure which. And we finished up in Karachi, where we stayed in the Pakistan mess. And I did five flights altogether. Then we came back by airline. And then, unfortunately, the company I was working for lost the contract. And another company got it. And I applied to them because I thought, you know, we all applied, all the other pilots and myself. And all the other pilots were taken on except me. And because I was a woman, they wouldn't take me on. Of course, they couldn't get away with it nowadays, but in those days there was no equal opportunities law.
How did you feel about that?
I'm absolutely livid. But, you know, what could you do?
Did they actually give that as their reason because you were...
No, they didn't give a reason, but that was the obvious one. I mean, they took on all the others.
How did you get around that fact? So when you were applying for jobs?
Well, that was always a very difficult because they would always, if you and a man applied, or the man always got the job. So quite often one used to write and just sign initials so they, you know, didn't know you were a woman. But there was a tremendous amount of prejudice then. And of course you had no comeback.
In retrospect, how do you feel about your career in the ATA?
Well, it was the best 5 years of one's life.